Hello everyone, it's Friday the 21st of March and welcome to episode 244 of the Kite Podcast with me, Will Evans.
And me, Ben Eagle. Now, it's been a whole year since Graham Wilkinson started his role as CEO of the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board. And he joins us today on the show to look back on his first 12 months in the role. We'll be discussing what he's learned, reflect on the unexpected challenges along the way, assess the priorities for AHDB at the moment, and ask Graham what we can expect to see in the next 12 months. Alongside Graham is podcast producer Becky Ray and everybody's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Walkland. Chris, over to you for the Milk Market Report. Where are you this week?
Well, I'm starting my report with more of a cautionary tale from the farm caught up in the latest animal rights video. I touched on it at the end of my podcast bit last week, if you hadn't all dozed off by then. I visited the farm this week and it all looked immaculate with the cows quiet and settled and everything in order. I think it's a good farm. The malpractice all happened several months ago. The farmers didn't know about it and were not involved. And the staff who were left the farm several months ago. Nevertheless, it's been a nightmare for the farmers, emotionally, physically, practically, financially, everythingly. Do not, therefore, underestimate the impact of the wheels falling off your animal welfare cart. It is mighty difficult and could be impossible to get them back on again. As I said last week, tread carefully. The animal rights people are out there wanting more stories, more publicity, more footage on which to damn dairy. They're targeting big livestock farms because they hate them and they want rid of them. Arla and Muller are top of the hit list, and as an industry, we commit to high animal welfare standards. We must continue to keep those standards high. And I say all that because AHDB have a crucial role to play in all of our reputation management. And so to the markets, and it was a GDT event this week, and a lot of you will already know that the index didn't move at all. On my Colin Dent GDT excitability scale, it didn't warrant him getting his phone out of his dungarees, let alone texting me. But if he sold into Leprino or Dairy Partners, though, he might have done. Mozzarella has had a torrid time on the platform in recent weeks, but it is enjoying a good run now. At the last auction, it increased by $330 and this time around posted another $225 gain to reach $4,700, its fifth highest price on the platform. So that equates to 3,600 sterling, up £100, and that's helping to drive Mott's forward. Arla's skim milk powder was another flop. It was down 100 euros equivalent to 2,335 euros. But butter did better. So EU butter on the platform is doing really well again. And that's at $7,670. And all in all, those prices convert to 40p UK price equivalent. In Europe, Dutch butter had another good week following the GDT. It's up for the third consecutive week by another 100 euros to 7,500 euros. And it hasn't crossed that threshold since November. Spot trades are going for slightly less than that now, though, at about 7,300 to 7,400. And all of that values UK butter at 6,100 sterling to 6,200. Cream is around £2.70 to £2.75. So again, like butter, that's climbing again. on the futures market, EU butter had dropped by an average of 90 euros this week to an average of 7,400. So taking a bit of a dive like real market prices. There are some heavier drops from May to August, but we're still 400 euros up on the month over the next 6 months on average. But EU skim dropped by another 40 euros, I'm afraid, taking the price to well below 2,500 euros. A month ago, prices were 2,650. So the AMPI price for EU butter and skim is still 36.5p. So no let up at all for yew tree people yet. Cheese has, if anything, picked up this month or this week with the late start to the season in Ireland, contributing and strengthening the price. There's no Irish cheese about at all, in fact. And there seems to be a bit more demand in the market too, as buyers realise there are no stocks about, sellers aren't desperate to sell, and there are no city deals in play. And so we've got mild at 4,000 sterling to 4,100, and mozzarella at 3,700 sterling. Finally, spot milk is around the mid 30 pence range. So we're all in all, apart from skim milk powder, fairly positive. However, we're now 7 to 8 weeks from peak, and I'm picking up more and more signals from processors about their prices. Their farm gate prices, a lot want to drop, and some by around 2p for May. I first warned people about the possibility of this at the CMEX conference in January, and there have been some reductions already, but not as many as I thought there would be. I think more are coming. So that'll give my fans on the farming forum something to chunter about over the weekend, won't it, hey? Now it's on to our guest, a Mr. Graham Wilkinson. I've never met the bloke. So I Googled him and found that, and quote, Graham is a folk singer, an entertainer, and a storyteller who gets to travel around and sing songs for people to help them forget what's bothering them. That'll keep him busy in this industry then. So sing your heart out, Mr. Graham. May I request the green, green grass of home for Will? It'll cheer him up from his country's Six Nations rugby riot. Goodbye.
I was waiting for a mention of that. Thank you, Chris. I've been trying to forget. Graham, good to have you back on the show. Big question for you, just to kick things off to start with. How would you describe your first year at AHDB in one sentence?
Oh, well, firstly, well done to Chris, because there is actually a folk singer called Graham Wilkinson. So there is actually truth in what Chris was saying there. But I'm certainly not a folk singer at all. But great to be here on the Kite podcast. I think certainly when I came into the role, I knew that the next 5 years were going to be a real crossroads, quite pivotal for British agriculture. And I think it's fair to say the speed of change that's happened has been quite unbelievable. So it's been a fascinating year, really interesting to get to know the team and understand what AHDB is all about. I'm still learning. But my goodness me, it's been one hell of a ride so far.
Yeah, it's been quite an eventful year for UK agriculture, hasn't it? Many listeners will know, I expect all listeners know, that you went to AHDB after quite a long period of working for Arla. Can you give us a brief overview of your career before you started in your current role?
Yeah, so I was born and bred on the dairy farm up in the northeast of England. So I've milked a few cows in my time. I left the farm, worked in a number of roles, but also worked for a farm up in Sedgefield, actually, where they had dairy, arable beef. We also had egg production as well. So I've done a few years of practical farming, which really sort of helped me across a number of sectors. But I started with Express Dairies right in the dirt before it then merged with Arla. And I actually do two stints at Arla. So my first stint was before, I suppose, the UK farmers became owners of Arla. So it was quite different. It was a different feeling on my both stints. And in between my 18 years at Arla with my 2 9-year stints, I actually did 4 years at Tesco as well. Firstly, within their MFPE function, so meat, fish, poultry, and eggs, and then in dairy as well. So I'd like to think that from popping units on right the way through to retail as well, with a lot of time spent at Arla, not just in the UK, but also managing the agricultural team across their 7 European countries, which was really interesting, actually. Understanding different cultures and how they operate across Europe was really fascinating. But I suppose then, you know, the opportunity came to really, for me, make a difference for British agriculture. And that was the real sort of draw for me to come and join HDB as the CEO back last March.
Yeah, that was your motivation, was it? What sort of wanting to make a difference?
It always has been my motivation, but I think the real opportunity for British agriculture, not just within dairy, but across all the sectors that HDB look after, I think that was the real motivation.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that in mind, Graham, and if you had sort of if you could outline your priorities, I suppose, going into the role, and I'm interested to see whether those have adapted at all through the year.
Yeah, so I ultimately what I wanted to be able to do was bring all my learnings into this role. So I have worked in commercial roles and also right from a farm perspective as well. So I think bringing some of that skill set into this role, into a organisation such as HDB, was important. But I set out sort of 4 key success areas for me that I wanted to prioritize. So first and foremost, I'm a good listener. I like to think that I'm a good listener. I think it's so important these days that we as an industry listen to each other and listen to our experts and listen to farmers. So firstly, it was very much around having a laser focus on our levy pairs, really understanding what their needs are, how we can support as a independent, evidence-based levy organisation. So I suppose what I've done since then is I've restructured the organisation so that we have actually a sector director sat within my leadership team. So Paul Flanagan would be my sector director for dairy. And also what I've introduced is very much a new business planning process, which is something that I've been used to in my previous roles. But what it helps us is actually we monitor on a monthly basis very strict KPIs and deliverables so that I'm confident that we are actually saying what we're doing as an organisation. And the team have really got behind that as well throughout the year. The second area that I wanted to prioritise was braver leadership. I think in the past, as an organisation like HDB has maybe sometimes been in the passenger seat, and I wanted to really in many respects, put us in the driving seat with our hands on the steering wheel. So I've created a function that's very much around leadership, looking at the areas, the opportunities across the environment, policy, etc., where we can really play a big role in that and also have a voice and a stronger voice for HDB and for UK farmers. The third area was around culture, because ultimately, when the world is moving so quickly, we need to make sure that as a team within HDB, that we are setting ourselves up for success. So we've done a huge amount of work internally as a team, really redefining the culture, our expectations and behaviours that we expect of each other's, from leadership right the way throughout the whole organisation. And we've created new values as part of that, that really, I firmly believe, help us work better as a function and ultimately deliver more for our levy pairs. And the final area, which I think there's a lot to come in this area is around potential growth opportunities for HDB, and looking at opportunities to do more across the industry, maybe in other sectors, but also bringing in maybe different income streams to work on other projects that benefit UK agriculture as well. And I'll hold my hand up. My fourth area probably haven't is something that we're going to be prioritising more in our 25 and 26 business plan process. So those were my four priorities. Absolutely laser focused on our levy pairs, brave leadership, and ultimately developing our culture, and then growth opportunities.
Graham, you talked about being a good listener and a laser focus on levy payers. Then what did they tell you, and how has that shifted what you focused on?
So I think from my perspective, I'm obviously surrounded by lots of farmers and growers, and I'm contacted on a daily basis from them. So we're listening. We do annual surveys as HDB, but outside of that, we've also got a team that is very much out there delivering engagement meetings, etc. So our link and our closeness with levy payers is real, and there's no getting away from it, Becky. At this moment in time, there is a lot of concern and there's a lot of worry out there from farmers, and there's no point in dressing that up. But I suppose, ultimately for me, it's looking at where the opportunities lie and where the opportunities are. And I think in some of the recent surveys that we've done, they want to see us champion British farming more, whether that's promoting British dairy or British produce, not just here in the UK, but around the world. They're wanting us to support with any misinformation, and we're doing a lot of work on that, on supporting the reputation of our industry. I think from an environmental perspective as well, there are opportunities, and there's work that we're doing around our baselining project and some future development around a farm data exchange opportunity, which will ultimately help farmers, support farmers deliver environmental improvements. But I think other areas as well as to how we can actually work closely, even closer with schools and children, and through the work that we do around health and nutrition, to be able to support our messaging to the industry. But it's all sort of wrapped around the fact that they want to see that. I think that farmers want to see that HDB is on their side, and we absolutely are.
Graham, I've got a question about culture, and you mentioned that you have some new values. So I'm just interested in what those are, but also, I suppose, how changing them will benefit levy payers, in your view.
Yes, I suppose what we did is we came together as a team to think about what the values should be, and we've actually turned them into sort of very much sort of agricultural terms. So they're very much around grabbing the bull by the horn. So we've got rid of any sort of corporate speak. We're very much grabbing the bull by the horns, mucking in together. So you can see that behind some of our values, there's a very serious message in what we actually want to deliver, how we want to work together as a team, growing our expertise, planting new seeds as examples. But it's easy to have those words, but then actually what we're then doing now is we've created a change leaders forum within the organization, and actually how we then roll those values out across the whole of the organization, that's what we're working together on now. And there are different, so if you are a leader, then we expect different behaviors of you at that level versus others as well. So but there are values, and the important thing is that anybody start new to HDB starting within the organization, that's what we expect of each other. It doesn't matter where you are, it includes me. It doesn't matter. It's important that we all live those values, and that's really important. And I think I think that by it will working strongly together, utilising our values, will enable us to get so much more out of the team that is in HDB, because we'll work better together, and I think the output will be far greater than what it's been in the past. I genuinely believe that.
I'm going to ask another follow-up question, because I think the cultural thing's really interesting, Graham, and particularly having been in that organisation pre-you and in the past. And people get sick of me talking about Simon Sinek, but I'm going to do it anyway. So people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And what you do simply proves what you believe. And that's one of my favourite quotes. And it sits really well with me, because authenticity is one of my sort of key values, that, you know, you've got to walk the talk. So the cultural stuff, absolutely believe internal culture is essential to a high performance team, and that's how you deliver results. My question is, what does that look and feel like to a farmer? How is AHDB doing stuff differently? You know, what are the examples of that that you can point to and say, you see, that's us grabbing the bull by the horns, or that's us mucking in?
So I think examples of that would be potentially some of the information that we put out. I mean, we are evidence-based organisation, and we put evidence out there. We put insight, and this is the information that we're putting out. And I think there are examples, recent examples, where we, whether it was the BBC documentary on TB, where our voice was, I would say, loud and clear in support of some of the misinformation that was delivered in that program. We've since challenged that as well. To me, that is grabbing the bull by the horns. And I think there are other examples in some of the information that we've put out as well. So I speak to farmers where they're telling me that they're noticing a difference in how our tone of voice, how we are talking, and how we are defending our industry is one example. I think behind the scenes, you know, it's how we cut out all, you know, unnecessary red tape within an organization just to get stuff done. I like to roll my sleeves up, and I like to see things happen and get stuff done. So I'd like to think that we'll see that levy payers will see more of that going forward.
Yeah. And Chris, just bringing you in maybe, what's your perception of how HDB is seen at the moment compared to, say, 12 months ago?
Well, I'd take it back a bit further than that. I think AHDB senior management is being seen. Graham is out and about there in a way that the last two CEOs of AHDB haven't. They've been the invisible people, and they just weren't out and about. So I think that's a huge step forward, because, you know, Graham's got to do his own PR, and he's got to do the PR for the organisation. And the first way you do that, the crucial aspect of communication is to actually be out there, to be seen and to be talking to people. So I think that's a huge step forward, that we've got somebody visible who is engaging with the industry. So if you wind the clock back a year, it was a crucial appointment that they got a new and a good CEO. The next crucial appointment, which I'll bring in now, is the new chairman. Nicholas Saphir has been rolled over. His chair tenure has been rolled over, but we're waiting for a new chairman or chairwoman to be announced. No idea who the candidates are for that. And Graham, I don't think you know either who the candidates are. Personally, I think it's ridiculous that not even the senior management of AHDB know who the chairman of the organisation is likely to be. So I'd like your comments on that, if you would oblige, please.
Thank you for that, Chris. And you're absolutely right.
Thanks for that hospital pass.
It's turning into a trial.
You're absolutely right, Chris. I'm not par of the process. I do know that interviews have taken place, but it's a ministerial appointment. It's an appointment made by DEFRA, and ultimately I'm waiting to find out who the new chairperson will be. But obviously, whoever they are, I'm very much looking forward to working with them. And you know, I'd like to be able to demonstrate to them that we've done a huge amount of work in this last year, and actually, you know, we want to take that on and step it on even further under the leadership of the new chair.
I had a terrible shudder that it might be Chris Walkland, and this was like he's going to play this back to your grave in 3 months' time.
It won't be me, but I do look forward to a sensible outcome as chairman, and to celebrating DEFRA actually making a sensible decision during this Labour government, because they haven't until now.
Gosh, digressing into politics.
Yeah, that's
well, it is a political decision. It's a political decision, and it's ridiculous.
Becky, what's your general assessment of AHDB at the moment?
Well, it's interesting what Chris said, because I remember stood at the CMEX conference at the bar, inevitably, Graham and I, not this January gone, the January before, and it had just been announced that Graham was going, and then I think he started in the March. And I remember saying to you, be visible, be seen, be visible. And then I think, was it 3 months in that I texted you and said, for God's sakes, will you get off my LinkedIn? Every time I went onto Facebook or LinkedIn, there was a video of Graham telling me where he was and what he was doing. And so you know, you said you were a good listener, Graham, and I think you've proven that point. I think AHDB for me, and even when I worked there, was you know, the terminology that we used to use was about stepping into the marketplace where there was market failure, so where the commercial organizations were not delivering or couldn't deliver pre-competitively, and being in that pre-competitive space. So all the stuff that that's been mentioned already on export in particular, and developing export markets. And I've seen Lucy's been bringing contingents of international buyers over to the UK to sort of showcase some of the British, you know, I'm referencing here dairy, but, you know, I know they've been down to Barbers and Cottiswold and various other dairy producers. So that sort of stuff, where actually the strength of a national organisation making national representation and showcasing the various opportunities that are available from GB and the UK, I think is really important. The marketing stuff, you know, you were dabbling with the marketing stuff when I was there, and they were really fantastic campaigns. You've stepped up again, and we've covered it in the past, the We Eat Balance campaign, the engagement with the sports clubs on nutrition, you know, and Will always speaks really passionately about this for his girls, have been all sportswomen, you know, that sort of stuff that again is, you know, getting into a sphere that it's really difficult for commercial organisations, really difficult for processors to step into. And obviously Dairy UK do a huge amount of that. But, you know, I do think it's important to bring the farmer perspective as well. And that education piece, you know, when I was there, or when I first joined AHDB, the Food a Fact of Life website had sort of was just tailing down, and it was really had been forgotten. But I think you've ramped that back up in terms of education again, and I think that's where you can add huge value. And probably the last really recent, really relevant bit that it just looks like a phenomenal piece of work that you've done is on the IHT topic, you know, where it's and it so perfectly fits in your box, doesn't it? It's cross sector, it's every layer levy payer is impacted, no matter what their size or scale. It's pre competitive. It's a risk for those farms and the whole supply chain and the whole food supply chain and food security. And really, for me, is the space that AHDB is. It should be in. So I think you've done some phenomenal stuff on the IHT, and obviously then amplified by NFU or you know, I remember the old terminology that AHDB made the bullets and NFU fired them. And I always thought that was, you know, quite apt for the relationship between the two organisations.
Yeah. I thought AHDB actually fired some bullets on IHT. I was a bit surprised when the press release came out. I thought, blimey, that's a lot grittier than we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Well,
I
think
how it went down with DEFRA, but congratulations on being a bit more forthright and representing your levy payers on that front as hard as you did.
I mean, the reality is that we only exist because of our levy payers. So, you know, they are my customer. Obviously, we can't lobby, but we provide the facts and the evidence. And if there is other, you know, evidence to be provided, then we'll look into that. But you know, I think those are examples of where we absolutely need to step up even further and really be the voice of the farmer, of the levy payer from an HDB perspective.
Just a quick one from me as a farmer. I think I've been what I've been pleased about is that I've felt often in the past that industry bodies have been reactive rather than proactive in terms of often very ultra defensive and seemingly sort of quite insecure about, I don't know, when we're attacked by sort of anti-meat lobby or those kind of people. But I feel like now the messaging from AHDB has been sort of just really positive and smart and proactive. And I've really noticed that, and I've certainly appreciated it. So yeah, just a quick comment from me on that.
I mean, the benefit that I have, and you know, really to give a shout out to the team, is that I'm surrounded by some really good people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's one of my great sayings, you know, surround yourself by people that are better than you. And when I look around the organisation, there's some fantastic people that work in HDB. And I think to Becky's original point about being visible, I think what I'm seeing now is that by being visible and being able to demonstrate the work that the team are doing, it's now empowering them. You know, if you're out there, you know, be visible, you know, talk about what you're doing. It's really important that people can see what we're doing. It also gives them an opportunity to comment or give us feedback on areas that we can be doing even more of. But actually what we're seeing is actually as a whole team, we're seeing more and more of our voice out there. We measure our share of voice on a monthly basis. So we've got all the stats that sit behind it. And there is an absolutely recognized significant increase in the last 12 months. And, you know, my message to the team is I want to see more of that.
Graham, just stepping away from dairy for a bit, and yes, we focus on dairy on the podcast, but you have cross-sector responsibilities. And just wondering, what do you think, is there anything you've sort of seen or learnt over the last year, any key things that dairy can learn from other sectors?
That's a really interesting question, actually, Ben, because I think there is so much that each sector's learn from each other. So they've how it operates. So the sector councils that represent each of the sectors, and we've just gone through within a dairy perspective. We've got some new people onto the dairy sector council. Anna Bowen, Andrew Rutter, Emma Furnival, and Andy Warren have joined the dairy sector council. So some really great people now as part of the dairy sector council and our other sector councils as well. So I sit within the meetings. It's interesting. There are similarities between the challenges within each of those sectors, but then there are also individual challenges as well, you know, quite different as well, which where we then focus our work. I think one thing that I do see in some of the other sectors is where you've got processors. So that from a dairy processor, you know, they're not a levy payer, whereas in other sectors, the processors are levy payers as well. I quite like that. You know, it's, you know, that whole supply chain kind of approach. And that's not to say we work really well with the dairy processors. Becky mentioned about the 40... The people came as part of our inward mission, went to Barbers as an example. Work on the books. We work with Muller as well, and work with Arla. So we work with all the dairy processors. But In other sectors, they are very much sort of integrated within, because of the how the levy is structured within sort of that sector council as well. And maybe there's an opportunity there in the future.
We have touched on this a little bit already, but perhaps we could just go into a bit more detail on your general priorities at AHDB for the next 12 months.
Yeah, so I think, so what we've done is I talked about the business planning process. So we have gone through our 25-26 business plan with each of the sector councils. So these absolutely integrated within the work that they do. So from a dairy perspective, the priorities ahead are very much driving demand for dairy through marketing, through our exports, consumer education, health and nutrition, then actually using our data and evidence as well. So examples of that would be how we step on from our environmental baselining. That's the 170 farm pilot. The work that we're doing on genetics and genomics and animal health and welfare, I think there's some really big opportunities there for us to do more work on. Ultimately, looking at how we offering practical support to levy businesses. And this is what I like about AHDB. You're able to take the science and then you've got 120 farmers on farm learning from each other. And, and I know that's something that Kate also do a fantastic job on, but farmers learning from farmers and being open to sort of share what they've learned, I think it's really important that we're actually putting the science into sort of practical changes that people can make on their farm. And also one thing that we're doing, we've been looking at a sort of a new communication strategy, which is very much around how we can be more specific to individual levy payers. So there's a lot of work to come on that, but where we can actually bring our work specific to each of the farmers. Because one of the key messages that I get is when people engage in the work that we do, the feedback is positive. And it's then, right, well, how can we encourage more farmers, more growers to engage with some of the work that we're doing? That's the real challenge. And I think I'm quite excited about the work that we're going to be doing as part of our future communication strategy that will support us in that, and how we really embrace technology, AI, etc., to help us deliver that.
That sounds great. If I, as a farmer listening, I suppose I ask on behalf of other farms listening, what am I going to see as a result of the focus in those areas? As a farmer on the ground, how is that going to benefit me?
So I think from a farmer on the ground, I mean, clearly we do a levy survey. So ultimately they want to see, us provide more public, the public with greater information, health and dairy benefits. We're about to launch a report very much on that within the next 2 weeks, and we're doing some further work from a dairy perspective. So you will see us champion even more the role that animal-based source proteins feature as part of a healthy, balanced diet. So we're going to be pushing that even more in how we then promote that to the public. The opportunities on how we promote farming and farming methods to the public, you'll see that. I think on the environmental baselining, it's a 170 farm pilot. It's a 5-year study, but we will start to share some of the positive work from that baselining project. So really demonstrating what I believe is actually, from an environmental perspective, there's a huge amount of positive work already happening on farms that isn't being necessarily recognised because of the challenges around sequestration. So we're going to be championing that more. And ultimately, what's interesting that came in is that there are 2,000, roughly just under 2,000 different projects that HDB are doing. So pieces of work across the whole organisation. There's 2,000 pieces. It's unbelievable. So I think what we're wanting to be able to do is really prioritise the work that we're doing, but also increase the visibility of the work that we do to encourage more farmers to get involved and get on board with the work that we're doing. So I think I am a firm believer that the future of our industry won't be delivered in a boardroom. It'll be delivered on farm. and we need to be more visible. We need to be more out there, and we have a great knowledge based team out in the field. A lot of the people that work within HDB are levy payers themselves. So I think, you know, really raising and increasing our profile out there is something that people will definitely see in the year ahead.
It's brilliant to hear.
Sorry, Will, can I just ask a question? Just those 2,000 projects, Graham, because one of the, if I remember rightly, when there was a sort of review with farmers and asking for their feedback on where they wanted AHDB to focus, sort of research and projects fell down the list. And actually, I mean, we had John Allwood, and I know he's on doing, he went on a trip with you guys, didn't he, to look over at phosphate and water quality. And we had him on the podcast the other week, and I know he's doing a live stream for you guys. What's the difference, I suppose, or how has AHDB's engagement with research changed? So rather than maybe funding the research, actually going out where the research and practical application is already happening on farm in the Netherlands, for example, and bringing it back?
I think this is something, when you look at the cereals and oilseed sector, they do a huge amount in this. We have the recommended list as part of that. So I think there are opportunities from a dairy perspective where we can do more. And I think you know, that recent trip as well is an example of that. I suppose, so I do think that there's opportunities for us to do more in that whole research area, but recognizing that we can't do everything. And I think to the point on the 2,000, you know, different areas, we've created a new vision around unlocking the success of British agriculture. And what I'm not very keen on just, yeah, that's a nice set of words. What does it actually mean? How do you know that you succeed in that vision in the next 5 years? So it's going to be a first for HDB, where I was always used to that when I was at Arla, we could talk about all the great things that we wanted to deliver. But if our milk price was 2p behind our competitors, then there was only one thing that mattered. It was get that milk price up. And so what we're doing is creating a mechanism and a measurement that sits behind that vision, so that we're then able to demonstrate for an investment. So for every pound invested in the levy, this is ultimately what you get out of that. And there's some areas when it comes to the work that we do on marketing, Eat Balance, the partnership that we're doing in books, where we can actually measure that. But there are other areas that it's more challenging, and some of that would be around the research, because it's innovation. We're not quite sure as to how you can then put a measure against that, but that's what we're looking to do as part of our new vision. And this isn't just us being locked in a room and trying to come up with it ourselves. Actually, we're going out there and listening. We've got a number of industry people together. We've got economists that are helping us actually solve that calculation on how we actually measure the value that we bring. And I think what's important isn't just to sort of go out there and say this is why we should exist, because no organization, you know, has any opportunity to just exist. But it helps me and helps the team really prioritize what are the areas that will actually deliver value, and using, you know, that mechanism to be able to define that ultimately to support our levy payers. So that's quite exciting, and it's a first for HDB, and I look forward to maybe sharing that on the Kite podcast in the future.
Fantastic. Okay. Looking ahead 5 years to 2030, what would success look like to you from an HDB point of view?
I think it comes back to that point around the levy, or as an organisation such as HDB being seen as an investment, and, you know, recognising that investment and how the work that we do and how we collaborate with others ultimately benefit farmers. I think that is the you know, the key for me in everything that we do, whether it's from on-farm practical support, information, or right the way through to how we're supporting, defending, promoting, exporting more. I think there's definitely opportunities from a dairy perspective versus others where we can absolutely champion the role of British dairy around the world. But yeah, I think that would be the what I'd like to be able to do is ultimately I want farmers, growers, the industry to really feel proud of the work that HDB and the team do on their behalf.
Brilliant. All right. It's been really, really positive episode. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you for coming on, Graham. That's all we have time for. A very big thank you to our guests, Graham Wilkinson, Chris Walkland, and podcast producer, Becky Ray.
Thank you also for listening. Please see the show notes for more information, including our podcast disclaimer. We will be back with you next week. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us here.